The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now a warning that our next conversation is not for little ears and will contain references to sexual assault and rape. After 4 years and nearly 3 months of a public trial, a French court found 51 men guilty of sexual offences against Gisèle Pelicot. It was the case that gripped the world as the French court in Avignon heard harrowing accounts of how Madame Pelicot's husband, Dominique Pelicot, facilitated the abuse and sexual assault of his wife for over 10 years. Gisèle Pelicot has become a feminist hero for standing up against her perpetrators and demanding they be shamed. One man who was by her side every step of the way was criminal defence lawyer Stéphane Babineau, and Stéphane joins me now. Stéphane, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
Now that the case is over, although there are some appeals lodged, and we'll talk about those in a moment or two, now that the case is over, how is Madame Pelicot doing?
Well, she's doing fine. She's mostly relieved that this very important first part of the case is now over. But as you just mentioned, there is no an appeal. And we know that, there are 17 accused that filed an appeal against the judgment, which is more or less a third of the accused, meaning that there will be another trial. She was prepared for that, but now it came as a reality to her. So she's resting, she's relieved. And, well, she's starting to preparing herself for the second part of the trial.
Now, in a sense, it's out of her hands at this point because the way this next appeal goes is rather different than we would be familiar with in this country.
Yeah, well, even here, because the first degree case was tried by a panel of five professional judges. And in France, this kind of case, when it goes to appeal, is tried by jurors. So it means that in appeal, instead of five professional judges, there will be a panel of nine jurors plus three professional judges. So it will be a very different hearing due to this difference.
Now, we know that many people in France expressed some dismay at the lenience of some of the sentences. So for those who are appealing, who are claiming that they were misled by Dominique Pelicot or whatever the grounds for their appeal is, there is a risk involved that the sentences they've received in the first trial might well be increased.
There is always this risk. Regarding the so-called leniency, Mrs. Pelicot's position has always been very clear, is that she respects the verdict, she respects the work of the court, and she also respects the right for the accused to lodge an appeal, because it's a basic right, and Mrs. Pelicot is really very respectful of everyone's right. So she never commented on either the sentences or the exercise of the right to appeal.
Now, this is a most unusual case and a very shocking case. It got worldwide attention, not just attention in France. What was your reaction as a lawyer when you were approached to take this on?
Well, I think that as many people who heard for the first time about the case, there was a part of disbelief. I saw that I understood wrongly what was explained to me. How could someone being raped in her sleep for over 10 years and the rape being organized by her husband? So there was a difficulty to understand how this could be possible. And then really, I was eager to understand. And as many of the professionals and the journalists, everyone wanted to understand how could such a horrendous situation could be reached. And we have worked a lot to understand this family, to understand these people, to understand Dominique Pelicot, Gisèle Pelicot. And the conclusion was that not only it was possible, but it happened. It actually happened. And this was very shocking.
Now, it's extraordinary how he was caught. He was found doing something else. He was reported, in fact, for trying to take pictures of up women's skirts, upskirting as it's called. And that led the police to his computer.
Exactly, where they discovered that for over 10 years, he has been documenting the rapes, filming them, sorting them, classifying them. So it was really a horrendous discovery for the police, who led to the arrest of over 50 men, 51 to be precise, one being on the run and possibly between 10 and 20 additional who could never been identified because they used the facial recognition on the pictures, on the videos. And they at some point, some of the videos and the pictures, some of the pictures were not good quality enough to allow the facial recognition to work. So they had to, unfortunately, consider that they had done what they could to identify everyone and they should satisfy themselves with the 52 accused.
Now, when the police saw this evidence, and you as a lawyer for Gisèle Pelicot would have access to that evidence, how much before the trial was shown to Gisèle herself? Because I'm sure she must have been, if you're shocked, and we're all shocked, mm-hmm. she must have been incredibly hurt mm-hmm. and shocked and dismayed at what she found had been recorded of herself.
Of course. Well, Gisèle Pelicot is someone who's very intelligent and she knows her limits. So there was some good in the fact that the investigation was lengthy because the case was revealed in 2020, on the 2nd of November 2020, to be precise. And the trial started on the 2nd of September of 2024. So there was more or less 4 years in between. And at first, Mrs. Pelicot felt that she needed to rebuild her life, to rebuild herself, because as she said, she was completely destroyed. She said at the court, in the outside I seem strong, but in the inside I'm completely destroyed. It's a ruin. And so first she focused on finding again a life for herself because she's been living with this man for over 50 years. And suddenly from one day, I mean, in the morning they were having their breakfast together and in the evening she had discovered that he organized her rape for 10 years. So she spent a lot of time trying to rebuild herself. And then when she felt that she was strong enough, she started asking questions about the case. And there we were assisting in disclosing the right amount of information, and watching the video really came at the very last. When she was considering lifting the closed door hearing, because in France, for these cases, it's up to the victim to decide if the case should be public or not. At first, as many victims, she didn't want for anyone to know about the case. She didn't want for anyone to attend the case, apart from the accused, of course, but not the public. She didn't want for her children, for her friends, for the public to know the specifics of what had happened to her. And then when she started considering that she shouldn't be the one to be ashamed, because she was extremely ashamed that there was in this world somewhere pictures, films, of videos of her in this position being raped. When she started considering that she shouldn't be the one being ashamed, why women should be ashamed for something that they're not responsible for? Why the accused should not be the one bearing the shame of what they did? Then she started considering that maybe this case should be public because it could help other victims, maybe victims of the same things, to realize that this is something that's possible. And more generally, all the victims of sexual assault to understand that whatever they have been victim of, they shouldn't be ashamed. And this is when she asked to watch the videos in order to prepare for what was coming, because she knew that the videos would be screened at the hearing.
Now, she also did not want to be one woman alone in the courtroom with just yourself and your colleague on her side against the lawyers for 50 accused and indeed those men themselves in the dock on the other side of the court. And when she went public, I mean, the support that she got from the world at large was fantastic.
Yeah, that's true. That was also something that was in her mind, that if she required a closed-door hearing, then she would be by herself in the room with the 50 accused and the 40 defense attorneys. So in total, we could say 90 people on the opposing bench. But she also wanted to open that to the public in order to better understand how this could happen. And it's true that the support came as a surprise, because we always, I mean, she believed that this would be treated as a down page news. I mean, as just a crime case that could attract. This was her concern, and this is precisely what she didn't want. This to be treated just for the graphic details and to attract voyeurism. This is what she didn't want. But she was willing to take this risk to open the doors of the hearing, and the result was absolutely over any of her expectation, because she never wanted to be celebrated. She never wanted to be admired. Before the 2nd of September 2024, she had refused all the interviews. She had refused all the offers to be to appear in the documentaries, in articles. She had refused all of that because she didn't want to attract attention. But she thought that the case should attract attention. And the level of support that she received was really extremely comforting, and absolutely it helped her to go through the entire process. Because at first, she didn't know if she could face it. Up until the end, she didn't know that she considered that if she could be there for at least 2 weeks, it would be a victory. And at the end of the day, she attended all the trial.
Now, what is disturbing about this? There is always a phrase used in situations like this: "Not all men." But when you look at the 50 or 51 known accused, the known perpetrators. And of course, there were those unknown ones who were never detected. They came from all walks of life. I mean, any man could have been sucked into this, it would appear.
Yeah, well, I think that this question was really debated at the trial. And one psychiatrist, an expert, said it, not all men could do that. But it's true that it's not because someone is a good father, a good husband, a good colleague, a good friend, that it necessarily means that he would be incapable of doing such things. In other words, well, it's not possible to say, well, this person is in a situation where it is impossible that he has committed a sexual assault or a rape because we know him, he's a good father, a good husband, a good colleague. Well, the victim's word should be considered as trustworthy, even when they accuse someone who has a very good reputation, a good standing. And then come the necessity to look at the evidence, to look at the consistency of the accusation. But it's true that what this case had shown, and actually I don't know how it is elsewhere, but in France, most of the sexual assault, they are perpetrated by people in the entourage of the victims. The idea that rapes are committed only in the dark under a bridge at night by an individual with a hood on his head is something that is, I think, comforting, because it's reassuring to think that bad people looks like that. Sadly, this case showed that it's much more complicated.
Now, the Gisèle Pelicot case, first round has come to a close, and we know there will be those appeals which will be adjudicated upon. You're not the lawyer for her daughter, Caroline, but she is also in the news. She was summoned to the police station and shown photos of an apparently unconscious woman dressed in unfamiliar lingerie, and she spoke to the BBC about her father.
You can't, imagine how hurts it is. It is it was a nightmare. I don't really remember the father that I thought he was. I look straight to the criminal, to the sexual criminal he is. He was always a sexual pervert. Always. There's no way you can wake up a morning saying, okay, I'm going to drug my wife for rape her. He should die in prison. He is a dangerous man. He is dangerous.
And that's Caroline, the daughter of Gisèle Pelicot. Now, Gisèle Pelicot, initially it was thought that she would change her name, I suppose, to try and rebuild her life. But she's not going to do that, because that name, Gisèle Pelicot, is now the name, really, of a French heroine.
When she started her new life after the 2nd of November 2020, when she moved, because she had 24 hours to move, to leave the house, because she was possibly insecure in this house. I mean, there were at least 50 accused that had raped her who were outside. She decided to change her name and to take back her maiden name to be as discreet as possible when she moved to a small town in France where no one knew her. But before the trial started, she decided to go back and take again her married woman name, because it's the name of her sons. It's the name of many of her grandchildren. Actually, it's the name of six of her grandchildren. And she didn't want them to be facing this trial with this, infamous name alone. So she believed that the name Pellicot should be Gisèle Pellicot's name and not only Dominique Pellicot's name. And in that, she had succeeded over an expectation, because now her sons and her grandchildren, they're proud of this name, which could have been only linked to the worst sexual criminal in French history, and who's not tied to Gisèle Pellicot's name. So this is a very big victory for her.
Stéphane Babineau, a criminal defense lawyer for Gisèle Pellicot, thank you very much for joining us on the program. And if you've been affected by the discussion we've had today, help is available on the national phone line for the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. It's 1-800-77-8888. Now, coming up later on News Talk, parents are pledging to delay giving their children smartphones until the junior cert year.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.